This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time, a Wave Sports and Entertainment original presented by Prize Picks. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Subscribe, like, rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. A little bit later, we're going to talk about some stuff like, hey, Sean, did the Falcons do anything over in the draft over the weekend? Anything happen?
No comment from me. You won't get a comment out of my voice.
Okay. Maybe I'll remember by the time we get around to that. We'll talk about the NFL draft a little bit later. But I have got to say, guys, Sunday afternoon and evening, that was one stupendous day of NBA playoff basketball from top to bottom. I'm going to be honest with you, Sean. I don't even remember what went down on Saturday. I felt like I watched some games, but I can't remember. Like, nothing about Saturday jumps out to me except for the fact that the Lakers must be just trying to rack up more freaking flyer miles. Or, like, maybe they got a girl in Denver or something that they wanted to go see, because I don't even know why the hell they got back on that plane.
I don't know. I feel like if I was LeBron, I'd get it over with a little early. You got, like, you know, movies and commercials to shoot. You might as well get a head start on that.
I will say this, though, man. Props to them. Nobody has put in, so far, we have not seen a straight-up 1-2-3 Cancun classic.
That's true.
That's right? Like, we have not seen that. I thought that Phoenix and Minnesota, that had all the makings of a 1-2-3 Cancun classic. But the Suns at least tried, and they gave it a run. They was just up against something bigger than them. And that something bigger than them was Ant-Man. We've been talking about Ant-Man on this show for a very, 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 very long time, largely because I just find him to be delightful. Also, because he cold as hell. But the other part, and Sean, I wonder how this resonates with you, because we got a little generational difference in this. I don't know for you guys. Like, are you an actual Zoomer?
No, I think I'm technically a millennial.
Okay. But you over there, you close. Yeah, y'all are, like,
sure.
They there.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, like, have you reached a point yet where stuff happens there? You'd be like, yo, I'm a little bit too old for that. Like, have you gotten to that place with the Zoomers?
All the time, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Just trying to get comfortable and get a gauge on, you know, where exactly you at. But anyway, Ant-Man wants it. Like, he absolutely 100% wants it, and he enjoys talking shit to these people. He enjoys getting in their face. They said at the end, I'm playing against my favorite player. Talking about Kevin Durant, he said he's playing against his favorite player, and he got to talk a little to him and let him know that he sent him home. Like, that, his wiring on this is, I'm going to show honor to my hero by putting his dusty ass out of here.
Which they don't really make him like that anymore. Like, that kind of dog mentality is rare to find.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, are there perhaps more of these laying around and we just don't know because they're not in the right places or not under the right circumstances? But he was out there. Like, I kind of wish it didn't happen against Phoenix, because Phoenix got a few too many guys who take that in stride. I want to see somebody be mad about it, right? Not because I think they should. Oh, actually, I do think they should be mad about it. This dude was hitting them bars with that thing right there, and they was just a little bit too amused by it. Like, somebody got, I mean, that's a big dude. I don't know if you really want to fight him, but somebody got to be a little bothered, a little miffed, one would think, under those circumstances. But I want to throw something out here. I've seen this come up on the internet a lot, and it is, when Anthony Edwards was in the pre-draft process, a question that was asked by a lot of scouts was whether or not he really wanted it. Like, what was his level of motivation? Like, what was his investment in basketball? Right? That was the question they asked about him. And, of course, that looks like a silly question to ask now, because he so clearly seems to have it. But it is worth noting that in the pre-draft process, Steve Kerr told the boy that he wasn't working hard enough, and Anthony Edwards took that to heart. Like, who knows how much all those things matter. But on one level, it is, ha, 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 they're so silly. They thought that Anthony Edwards didn't want it. But on the other hand, does this not demonstrate why that question is important? You know what I mean? Like, now that you've seen this dude out here and you see how his game is fueled by the fact that he so clearly wants it, Like, do you see why that matters? Why that's something that has to come up, right? Or something that you want to have come up out there. You gotta have somebody out there that just wants to demolish people, that wants to devour folks. He is that guy. And it just so happens that he is that guy with incredible physical skills. But he is, and this is not like a technical thing. This isn't about how well he plays for Minnesota, their postseason future. We got plenty of time to talk about this. Sean, just curious, like, coming up, who's your favorite player?
I grew up idolizing Tracy McGrady. That was my favorite player for a really long time.
What was it about him?
The way he scores, physicality, aggressiveness, kind of like, you know, I can score on anyone. Similar reasons why I love Carmelo. And, you know, Ant kind of fills that bubble as well.
Now, let me ask you this. It's kind of like, there's something about how them kind of players make you feel, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's just like, it's like exciting to watch.
Yeah, but I think, but the feeling part is important. You know, something I've talked about, especially since we brought the show over here to Wade, that I really wanted to lean in more in the way that I look at all this stuff. Like, we end this because of how we feel, right? And there's something about a dude like Anthony Edwards, that's a dude that becomes somebody's favorite player. It doesn't matter if he's the greatest player of all time. Like, I was talking to my man Kravitz on the phone before we were doing this, and he's like, I think Edwards has moved into that top five, and maybe that's the case, but I feel like he's the type of player where, A, it doesn't matter if he's in the all-the-time top five because he's in the big moment top five. Like, Isaiah Thomas, the OG Isaiah Thomas. I don't know if he was a top five player that era at 6'1", but he was the top five when it mattered, dude. And that's what Edwards is showing himself to be, is a top five when it matters, dude. But it ain't even about how good he is. It's about how you feel when you watch a dude like that, right? Like, when you watch the way he moves when he's got the ball. When you watch, it is coming up to 2 minutes left. Y'all got a 2-point lead. And Kevin Durant's down there. And I forget who else it is. And I'm going to lean and bang on y'all right now in this moment that matters. You know how that feels when you see it. And that's the dude where, if I was still 10, 11 years old, that's the poster that you want on the wall. Specifically, that play, that picture, that's the poster. That's what you want to see. That's the reason why, by and large, we get into this in the first place and we watch these games and we enjoy these things, right? And look, I know it seems easy to go into it, it was better when I was young sort of thing, right? And that's not really the place that I try to go to when I talk about this stuff. But I do recognize this, that as we've added more money and more levels to this game, we've changed up the incentives, why it is that people love this and the people who play it and what they are in it for and the types of games that they play and whatever it is, right? Those things have changed. There is something that is very throwback about somebody like Edwards because it looks like he really, really cares, right? And I think that this league, it's interesting because this league has spent decades or did spend decades with people continually questioning the work ethics of their play, of its players, whether or not anybody cared, da-da-da. And, you know, that was always the rap. It was very racially based, obviously, but that was always the rap on the NBA. Let me tell you something. This doesn't get discussed nearly enough. They beat the allegations on a lot of that stuff. Like, a lot of the things that we used to hear about the NBA when we were younger and people talk about why they didn't watch it and everything else, you don't hear that stuff anymore. You don't hear people going out of their way to talk about how nobody plays defense anymore. You don't hear people talk about how they don't try hard or how they don't care. You don't hear that anymore as a part of the larger discourse on the NBA. However, it's wild because you seem to see fewer dudes who so obviously and clearly want it. And one thing I do recognize now as I've gotten to this age and as I watch and I think more about the way sports goes, what we really want to see above all else is people who want it. That's the most compelling thing. That is the secret sauce that makes this go, is looking out there and knowing that these dudes want it. And with the Ant-Man, we got a dude who want it. And also, bless his heart. Sean, do you have siblings?
I'm an only child.
Okay. I am the youngest in my family, but I'm youngest by a lot. All right. I can't imagine being the little brother, but also having to be the big brother. And bless the Ant-Man, because look at this.
I mean, again,
let me just say, tonight he wasn't in foul trouble. Like, the first three games, the motherfucker just kept fouling. And tonight, I told him, what did I tell you last game?
He said, yo, can you find a way not to foul him? I said, I'm going to try.
Like, if you watch the game, every time in the third quarter when we would grow a lead, it's because he's in the game. Because they don't have a matchup for him. I'm like, Cat, we're not going to win game four if you foul. I told him yesterday, we're not going to win game four if you keep fouling. You keep fouling. And you see what he did in the third quarter. You see what he did in the fourth quarter. Like, He's like I always tell you, he's the best offensive player on the team. Like, if he's not in foul trouble, it's a problem for any team that got a guard, is because he can stretch the floor, he can post, he can play off the catch, he can pass. I mean, like, he can do everything. So we just got to keep him from getting in foul trouble, man. He's going to be great every night.
If I told you the guy on the right was 5 years older than the guy on the left, Sean, I'm just saying, you'd never believe it. I'm not trying to, not now. I'm not doing it right now. I'll maybe do it later. Okay. But not now. But he's big brother in this, very clearly.
I love the classic older brother move of, like, he's clearly shitting on Cat, being like, you got to stop fouling, but brings it back of like, but we can't win without you in the game. You know, you're doing all this great stuff. And I'm just like, wow, he really is the older brother there.
Oh no, he told him later in the clip, quote, quit fucking fouling. Like, he in front of everybody, in front of God and the media and everybody, told him, quit fucking fouling, right? This, like, he is Carl Towns' big brother. Carl also, by the way, used two different voices in that same conversation at the table. He's been pretty good this series. I just don't like what he stands for, guys. I don't like what he represents. I understand this. I love what Ant-Man represents, and Ant-Man seemed to be bringing him into the place they need to be. Think about this, Sean. They brought Kevin Garnett in there to be Carl Towns' big brother, and I guess that year didn't quite take, but Anthony Edwards came in there. Anthony Edwards be taking questions for him, and what looks more like a big brother than sitting up there with an undershirt out the pack with two earrings and a baseball cap while your man's over there, like... No, I don't want to say that because that sounds bad. Every example of what I want to say that looks like would perhaps seem to be racially derogatory to some people. But I am saying the big brother in the undershirt out the pack, which is what I'm calling him now, because I don't think we can call him what we used to call him. I feel like that's an inappropriate term. I don't know if we've had a public reckoning about what we call the tank top undershirt out the pack. But he in the tank top undershirt out the pack, while Carl Towns is over there dressed in like full clothes. Like, that's what happens with somebody, like, daddy got a raise in between these two kids. Like, you know what it looked like? That's what it looked like. It looked like they brothers, but Anthony Anderson lived with baby mama number one, and Carl Towns lived with baby mama number two, who daddy did actually married. Like, that is visually what that picture looked like right there with those two dudes. But congrats to Minnesota. They're going to wind up playing Denver in all likelihood. I can't wait for that series. Sean, you say you are a Rockets fan. You are not a Knicks fan. Were you never a Knicks fan?
Well, I grew up in Jersey. I had a lot of friends being like, oh, be a Knicks fan, be a Nets fan. I would say I watched more Nets games than Knicks games in the like mid-90s. A lot of Keith Van Horn, Kerry Kittles, Jason Kidd.
Yeah.
Not the Knicks.
Nobody's having more fun right now than Knicks fans. It looks like, I thought about going to the game in Philadelphia, right? I thought about it, and then I just looked at the prices, and I just didn't want to go, and so I decided to stay. And apparently, the Knicks fans were not going to be dissuaded in any way. They absolutely invaded in Philadelphia. Philly fans were not happy about it. Understandable that they weren't happy about it. They wound up getting beat. Jalen Brunson went for 47, something like that. Like, I mean, wow. It was a great game. It was a fun game. Joel Embiid going out like a sucker in far too many ways, which is a shame, because he out there playing like a warrior, but he had to engage in sucker horrific behavior because I guess they feel like they ain't really got no more answers. I need to explain something to people, though, who don't really understand how this East Coast thing works and how it is that the Knicks fans could take over. And part of it's about the way that the East Coast works, and part of it is just about the way that New York works. Now, Sean, you left this area quite a while ago, right? And so I don't know if he hits you in the same way that he hits me, because you weren't making adult decisions, you know, really, when you left here, right? But you know how people talk about how high the rent is in Los Angeles?
Yep.
At different points in my life, I've had the bright idea of maybe doing some bi-coastal living, and I go look at the real estate listings, see what's for sale in LA, right? Can I tell you something, Sean? I'd be looking at them prices after living in New York for 7 years, and I'm like, yo, this is a steal, right? Like, the prices in your place that you think seem ridiculous and seem absurd, after you live in New York, those prices look like steals, okay? So when you're a Knicks fan and you look at what the prices are for a game in Madison Square Garden, and then you go look and Philly, and you can get like row 15 for $400 a seat, you in Milwaukee or whatever other place it is that I would never live in, you out there like, I could never dream of paying $400 for that. You come live in New York for 6 months, you look at that $400 and you are like, wow, it's like they're just giving tickets away. That's how it looks to the New Yorker. So I'm looking at who's on the lower bowl. They don't look like lower bowl people. You know what I'm saying? Because you know why? In New York, they not lower bowl people. Because in New York, it might cost you $700 to get into the upper deck. But you can get down there in Philly and them games for like $450. I saw my buddy Nick courtside down there. You can do that in Philadelphia when you got a New York mindset about how much stuff costs. And they so happy on top of it. Like, I hear people talk about it like, oh, for the Knicks fans, it's worth it because No, man, we live on a different pay structure. That's just what stuff costs here. Those don't even look like playoff prices.
Also, a lot of my friends from New York have now moved to Philly because those prices are much better. So think about how many more New Yorkers now are in Philly. They're like, oh, they're playing in Philly? I'm a Knicks fan still. Like, that's perfect for me.
That train ride is like an hour and a half. Like, it's not hard. Like, it's so easy to make that work. And they just bum rush their spot. And Philly, one of them places where they care way too much. Like, I'll be honest with you, Sean. I expected it would be a bunch of Knicks fans up there in the fighting seats.
They were all over. There's a lot of orange and blue.
Yeah.
Like, if you show the crowd shots and, you know, Embiid clearly disappointed, but it's like, what do you want them to do?
They were down there in the lower bowl and they had a bunch of them sections that looked like outtakes from Trading Places. It's Trading Places after they figured out what the scale was. Like, not once they joined forces and decided, like, otherwise, why are you guys standing here in the same place? I can't figure it out.
It's crazy seeing the shots in the arena after the game, and Philly fans were like objectively quiet. Like, you know, you would expect if Knicks fans are in your stadium yelling, "Go Knicks," you would want to fight back, but they had no juice, no nothing.
Nah. They got punked. They got punked by the Knicks. And look, I'm telling you, man, the Knicks, it's very likely that they're going to go to the conference finals. They're going to be so happy around here if that happens. And I just want to say this thing right fast before we keep this moving. Sean, what I tell people about Paul George is the number one. What I tell people about Paul George, didn't I say it? Didn't I say it?
Yeah, that was a great take by you. He's a great number one. He's a great number three. Something about the two.
Yeah,
Last game, he was the number one for sure.
They need Kawhi Leonard to not be out here trying, right? Like, they need to, like, I don't know how they do it, but if Kawhi Leonard plays in the way that he does when he's come back in these games, he messed the party up. Paul George was incredible in game four. I mean, that one's probably going seven. That one's been a great one. And I just want to say something right fast to make all the Zoomers mad. Kyrie Irving has been incredible also, and I keep seeing people make the point that Kyrie Irving is the best finisher at the rim and that they've ever seen in the NBA. I've even seen older people say that. And I want to make sure that you guys hear me very clearly when I say this, okay? You need to know this. The greatest finisher at the rim in the history of the NBA is Michael Jeffrey Jordan. All right, Sean, I don't be watching the draft. Not anymore. Not during the playoffs. I watch the playoffs and I watched the draft on social media just to see how people are going to react. And I wasn't really paying too much attention. And then I looked at my mentions and I saw my good buddy L. Duncan. And L. Duncan said that this is why Bomani tells y'all to get off that narcotic. And I had no idea what in the world had transpired with the Atlanta Falcons to make that a get off that narcotic moment. And then I looked up and it said that the Atlanta Falcons had drafted Michael Penix Jr. at quarterback. And Sean, why are you doing this? Like, why do you look like this already?
Oh, man, tough. I sent you a text and you were like, I think something along the lines of you're like, it kind of does make sense, as boneheaded as it was of a decision.
See. Hear me out here. Hear me out. Okay. I think you guys have got this wrong. Drafting Michael Penix was not the bad decision. Okay. If you think that you see a franchise quarterback, okay? Not a starting quarterback, but a franchise quarterback. If you think that there is a franchise quarterback in the draft and you do not have a franchise quarterback and that franchise quarterback that you believe you see is available at that moment, then 100% you take that guy. And the Atlanta Falcons clearly seem to believe that Michael Penix Jr. is a franchise quarterback. That's what they think. Okay. I think that we would all agree with the idea that you should do that if you think you see a franchise quarterback and you don't have a franchise quarterback. Now, Sean, as you hear me say that, what is your first thought?
$100 million plus contract to Kirk Cousins.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes. I knew that was where you were going. You were going to say yes, but they gave a $100 million contract to Kirk Cousins, okay? But, I would like to ask you this question. Do you believe that Kirk Cousins is a franchise quarterback or merely a starting quarterback?
I think he's a starting quarterback, you know, and I think it's evidenced by the fact that you would tell your franchise quarterback that you're drafting another quarterback, and yet they did not tell their starting quarterback that they're drafting another quarterback.
See, you're getting the subtleties and nuances of the situation, right? Kirk Cousins, ain't nobody been willing to make an honest woman out of him. Nope. He is Mr. Right Now at every turn. Even a team that gave him a guaranteed 3-year contract was like, shit, can't wait till he moves out. Like, he is Mr. Right Now. That's what happened. That's all it is. And what I think the Falcons are saying to us is, look, a starting quarterback these days goes for $40 million per year. That's not franchise quarterback prices. That is starting quarterback prices. $40 million a year. They gave that to Kirk Cousins. Now, I'm just going to ask everybody that's out here listening to me right now, okay? Everybody that's out here listening to me. I'm just going to ask you this, okay? If you thought that a great quarterback for your future was directly in front of you in the draft, would you not take him because you had Kirk Cousins? Would you?
That's a great
now,
question.
The question ultimately is Michael Penix a franchise quarterback? I joked after they did this, it was kind of wild because they just signed Kirk Cousins and then with the number 8 pick, they signed a quarterback that's the same age as him. Penix is not the same age as him. I want to say that he'll be 24 at the start of the season. Far too much is being made of how old Michael Penix is. This is not a running back. This is not a wide receiver. This is a position where if it goes right, he plays into his late 30s. More important than that is, it would be great if you got a quarterback and you got him for 15 years. You're really just hoping for 5 or 6. Right. And so if you draft him and 6 years from now, he is your excellent starting quarterback, it doesn't matter that he's 30 years old. You know what I mean? Like, that's just not that. This isn't the position where I think you worry about that. If he's only 27 when he finally gets out here to throw a ball, I just don't think that part matters at all, because you could reasonably bank on him through 33, 34 years old. OK, so that's not the concern with him. The concern obviously is the Carfax are bad. He's had 4 season ending injuries. That's not the part that you want. Totally get that. But if the Carfax weren't bad, he's the number 2 pick in the draft, if not the number 1. All right. So they got him. I'm just saying this right now, though. And I've been seeing this, boy. And this is how it works. It's the GM and the coach. Sean, they had Terry Fontenot, black man, Raheem Morris, black man, explaining how they took this big old dude in the sunglasses with his shirt open with a chain to be their quarterback. Oh, brothers, I hope this works out well. I really, really, really do.
That visual of the GM talking to Arthur Blank and Arthur with his hands by his back, just like nodding, trying to understand, yeah, was just a scene. Look, it's just anyone but the Falcons, you know?
All I'm saying is this, man. I saw Michael Penix sitting on that couch with their shades on, and I'm like, oh, brother, I know what I think's going on here. that was my thought. I could be wrong. I tell you what else I noticed. His girlfriend was sitting next to him, and his mama seemed very comfortable with the fact that his girlfriend was sitting next to him. Can you put the picture up of that big old Nigerian dude from Penn State when he got drafted by the Jets? Olu, I forgot his last name already, but if y'all ain't seen this, this becomes everybody's favorite thing at the NFL draft: awkward girlfriend on camera sightings. So he has just been drafted, and you notice that, like, she ain't really, you see what's happening? She's trying to make a move around. She ain't really getting there. It's not happening. All right, mom's responsibility is she taking the inside, but she gonna need to kick out in just a second. They bring in the overload blitz is on the way. And so mom go kick out. You see, though, she's staying tight. She's staying tight to the inside. All right, there she go. There she go. She had to kick out. She had to kick out, make that happen. She is not letting this young lady get any closer to her son in this moment than is absolutely necessary. He gets up, he's showing the whole house his new hat. Now mom's right up there. Sean, I saw a tweet about this. They said that this boy got blocking in his DNA. Because mom was not letting the girlfriend who you can see on the YouTube video. I'm not telling you what she looked like, but I bet you can guess. Oh, he thought she tried to get around at the end, Sean. Like, she thought everything had settled down. She thought she was getting through. You know what that was like? That's like when the whistle blows and Kevin Garnett be blocking your shot so you can't see it go in.
No buckets, no matter what. I just love the mom, like, clearly, it takes a lot for her to stand up, and she got up quick to get that position.
Dude, my thing about this is, like, there's some things that we ain't figured out how to properly talk about on television in these contexts. One of them, for example, is Arizona took a wide receiver whose father is very famous, and we don't really know what to do. Although I did see what ESPN did an interview with him, Sean, and it seems that their strategy is to tweet through it. Just keep it going.
I say that clip because, you know, now I've understood the assignment of not saying his name and not mentioning it at all. But I sent you that, and I was like, they got this man talking about parenting on ESPN?
Dog! But what are we supposed to do? Like, I don't. Hey, look, remember when Trey Wingo used to do the draft and it was just all poverty carols? Right.
Every other clip. Yeah.
What would he have done with that one? That's what I'm saying. We don't know what to do. We don't know what to do. And the other thing we don't know what to do with is we don't know what to do with these white girls showing up with their boyfriends at the draft. Right. We all see it. We all find it to be a little bit funny. And the way that I know that we all find it to be a little bit funny is they still make funny movies about interracial relationships. Y'all didn't Eddie Murphy and Jonah Hill and Julia Louis-Dreyfus? They did like a Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, right?
Yeah, it came out recently. I lasted maybe 10 minutes. It's pretty unwatchable.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. We all understand that, like, it's a little, you know, it's jokes to be had when this white girl shows up, and you can always tell we as black people, you know, when mom is just a little bit annoyed by the fact that this happened, and on top of it, it's going to be on TV. You know, like, they might not have told all their friends. I've seen that happen in real life before, right? It is hilarious every single time, but you can tell that somebody's mama is not feeling how this went, not feeling it at all. And the other part is, it's a girlfriend, right? Like, sometimes you can look and you get the vibe, okay, she's been around for a while. Sometimes she just got there. And that's when mom is not feeling this at all. She just got there right before the checks. Oh, no.
She saw two pancake blocks in the Rose Bowl and was like, yeah. How do I get in there?
The problem that the parents have is that you can't explain to somebody that age that this is just probably a girlfriend right now, number one. And number two, this is most important. Even if it is just a girlfriend, what you gonna tell her to stay home? You know what I'm saying? Like, if that is your girl, right? Like, what you gonna do? You got no solution other than to have her sit next to you on TV and then looking awkward. Sean, did you ever see the Isaiah Wilson clip from the year 2020?
I don't remember it. I let me pull it up.
Look that up right now. Look that up. Now you look it up. After you find it, I want you to put it up on the screen for the people to see. Now, for those of you who don't remember Isaiah Wilson, I do not blame you. He played for the University of Georgia, and then he went to Tennessee, and he was there for like 15, maybe 20 minutes for whatever reason. They got him out of there. It was not going. But this, I believe, was the COVID draft where everybody was just stuck at the crib. And my man was at his crib in Brooklyn. So, you know, they ain't had no space. You know what I'm saying? So he had the crib in Brooklyn. Sean, you come across it yet? Yeah. Yeah. So he had the crib in Brooklyn. You know, it's tight in there. But look what happened when he got drafted. He just sitting there, overcome by emotion. His queen comes sit on his lap. Yeah, that's a bad angle. His mama had to yank her out of there. Literally put that girl up off of his lap, Sean. Off of his lap.
That's clearly a linebacker in the family, right? Or some more of the physical player.
Mom had made the decision that this was not going down. That's all I'm saying. This is not going down. And these are things that happen in life. They happen on these screens, and I just wish there was somebody on the screen to say what, like, you remember when Pat McAfee broke the ice on the naysayers?
Yeah, yeah.
You need somebody to do that. Yeah, Sean, get the people the full view. I just sent it to you. If you can get the people the full view of what I'm talking about here with Isaiah Wilson. Moms yanked her off his lap. She really thought that she was there being tender, right? Now, I don't know what role the camera being in the house played in this, but she thought that she was being tender in this. And Isaiah Wilson's mama was ending all of that. Here we go, here we go, here we go, here we go. Here we go, here we go, here we go. Girl, get up! Like, did the boy even notice what was going on?
I love that there's a clear struggle where, like, you don't see their mouths, yes. But she's like, I'm here. Leave me alone. I'm okay.
That girl bold, too. I, if I'm in that woman's house, I can't even see her. And I'm going to tell you right now, if I was in her house, I'd have just got my ass up, personally.
I would have just left.
That's what I would have done.
I would have left.
Yeah. Yeah, time's up. Time's up. I got one last thing for y'all. We got a new favorite player coming off the draft. This is my man, Keon Coleman. Keon Coleman played wide receiver at Florida State. And I think a lot of you guys hear me talk about people being from Opelousas, Louisiana. And he is not exactly an example of what I mean when I talk about an Opelousas all-star. But when you hear this man talk, he's an Opelousas all-star. And I need you to understand what I'm about to show you or play for you. This is before the press conference has even started. He was just sitting down. And this is watch the magic.
Huh? Nah, man, you forgot I went to school in Michigan for 2 years? You, guess where I got this from, though? I'm saying you got to guess. You're going to be wrong, though, but guess. Time is up. Nah. Macy's. What you mean? They be on sale on the rack, all the colors. Look, $79.89. Nice little deal. You can get the trench coat for like $100. Nice little. I'll take you there, personally. I might go get some more colors. I need a blue one and another red one. See, I ain't know nothing about Thanksgiving. I get you. See, I shop like my mom. I get my coats in the summertime. You got to shop a season or two before, just in case, you know, and it be cheaper. Because you go at Thanksgiving, everybody in Thanksgiving, you know what I'm saying? Who we starting with? Oh.
He didn't even know. This is not the press conference. Shaw, this is why that boy's a team captain. Because he is a very particular person that we all know in our lives. Not everybody does this, but a guy like him is so handy. And he is not only the dude that knows a good deal, but the dude who tells you where to go to get that good deal. And just so you know what a good dude he is, he told that dude that he would take him personally to go shop for these coats. Sean, he'd been in Buffalo for like 45 minutes. He don't even know where the Macy's is. And when he said, I will take you there personally, he means that. Like, he will come back in the next day and be like, hey, bro, if you want to go down to get them coats, you let me know. I found where they at.
Just a pure soul who, like, means everything he says type person. And I think, like you said, yeah, that's someone who everyone in the locker room is going
to
love.
Who shows up to town and offers to show the locals around? That is what he sat down and said he was going to do. He's like, look, I will take you there. And she put little mama on game. She talked about a Thanksgiving sale. He's like, no, you got to shop a season or two early. See? Right? And he's so proud of himself for putting everybody onto this game. And again, he's not doing that because it's a press conference. He doesn't even think the press conference has started. He's just making conversation with the people who are in front of him.
I love when he said, like, we get our winter clothes in the summertime. Because that's like, you know, I grew up in that same way. And I'm like, that's the sign of someone who's raised really well and holds those values and morals.
And remembers the exact price. $79.89. You get the trench coat for $100, right? When people start running down for you, everything by the item. Like, he has gone in there and he came out of there and let everybody know, hey, baby. Macy got them a nice little deal. That's what he called it. Got it a nice little deal. He was so proud of himself for the deal that he got on that coat that somebody noticed. I'm rooting for that boy. I'm telling you. NBA playoff basketball is in full swing, and testing your skills on Prize Picks is the most simple way to get in on the action. You just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projected stats, and submit your lineup. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with playoff basketball and hockey entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. And if you stick around for the end of the show, you'll hear picks from producer Sean that could potentially help you win big. Prize Picks is really simple to play, and you can make your picks and submit your entry in less than 60 seconds. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, and an enormous selection of players and stat types are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. So make sure you go to prizepicks.com/Bomani and use code Bomani for a first deposit match up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/Bomani. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy. Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training, just in time for summer and warmer days. I've been in the gym a little bit trying to get my fitness in check so I can break these skinny allegations I keep getting. And spring is the best time of the year to take a new look at your fitness routine, dial it up a notch, and continue powering on. Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Whether you prefer to run outdoors, row, or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has something for you. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your training plan in mind. Personalize your workout. Whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance, Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals while challenging yourself at every level. Now you can catch up on your favorite NBA games with NBA League Pass while you push yourself to new levels of fitness. Watch your favorite games and win your workouts with NBA League Pass on Peloton and visit onepeloton.com. Peloton all-access membership and NBA League Pass subscription required.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo, here's our first clip of the day.
Have a question? Type it into a search engine and voila. Pages of links to original AMP material that answers it. Doing this is now so common that it's easy to forget what an extraordinary accomplishment and resource the web is. In just a few decades, much of human knowledge has been collectively written up and made available to anyone with an internet connection. Instead of having to click through and read various sources, AI systems will summarize them for you. This efficiency may seem great in the short term, but it will be disastrous for the web. One problem will be the reliability of these summaries. Behind the scenes, today's search engines are in a constant arms race with entities who attempt to inject spam, viruses, or simply their handpicked facts and their favorite conclusions high up in the results. As AI summaries become more popular, these search engine optimizers will turn their energy into manipulating the generated answers, potentially far harder to eradicate. And there's a more fundamental problem. Traditional search engines connect creators to the audience for their work. This connection is fundamentally why writers write, why pundits podcast, why people create in any medium, to connect to a human audience. It is this motivation to connect that fuels the continued building of the web. But AI summarizers do not connect. They synthesize their own answers, treating human-created content as digestible raw material. Eventually, people may stop publishing on the open public web, limiting their work to select audiences, walled off from the content hoovering AIs. Eventually, the great public commons of the web will be gone. This is not inevitable. To avoid it, internet platforms need to recognize that creative human communities are highly valuable resources to cultivate, not merely sources of exploitable raw material. AI developers need to recognize that maintaining the web is in their self-interest. Protecting it and nourishing human creativity and knowledge production is essential for both human and artificial minds.
Hey man, ain't nothing more underrated these days than human beings. And the people that are doing the underrating is human beings. We are going to be complicit in our own destruction. What they describe as a problem. My brother and I were talking about this, though, and he made a very interesting point that as of now, AI is worse. This is the worst version of AI that we're ever going to get. That should be reassuring. But instead, it is terrifying. It is terrifying, right? Like, at least on one level, you can look at this and be like, oh, it's just got some bugs, but it'll work itself out and everything will be okay. No. I look at this and I'm just like, yo, our overlords are going to get even smarter and we're going to be in big trouble, buddy.
I have never heard a reassuring or uplifting AI story on this show today, to date. So I don't think we'll get it anytime soon.
I stay struggling in recognizing that there's ways that I can use it to make my life better. But at the same time, I feel like we need to take a stand. Right. Like, it's so like somebody got to stand up against this. You can't just pop in and be like, oh, but it's good for me this time. You know what I'm saying? Like, but at the same time, I feel like it's over. I feel like it's a wrap.
It's for sure inevitable. But like, why can't I delay the inevitable by just using my own brain just a little bit?
Yeah. Maybe we got to move to some of them countries that ain't got all this internet.
Not a bad move.
Yeah. Let me tell you, that's what we say. That's what we say. I was talking to my boy the other day about like if something happens and we got to like escape. You know what I'm saying? We got to go find a new place or whatever. And I'm like, hey, man, one thing, my number one requirement, you got to have electricity all the time.
Yeah, not just when shit hits the fan.
That's right. That's right.
Here's a somewhat uplifting story. I'm shocked by this one.
Hi, Bomani. My name is Jamil Zaki. I'm a professor of psychology at Stanford University and author of a new book called Hope for Cynics. And this week, I published a piece in Vox called Compassion is Making a Comeback in America. Empathy is the ability to share, understand, and care about other people's feelings. And since the 1970s, psychologists have asked people about their empathy using a simple questionnaire. For instance, you might be asked how much you have tender, concerned feelings for people less fortunate than yourself, or how much you look at everyone's side of a disagreement before making a decision. Millions of people have taken this empathy questionnaire and gotten empathy scores. And in 2011, researchers found that American empathy had been falling from the 1970s through 2009. The average American's empathy in 2009 was lower than 75% of Americans just 30 years before. This spurred 1,000 think pieces on moral decline, kids these days, and everything you can think of. But last year, these same researchers updated their data, and it turns out that American empathy and compassion have made a comeback. People report being just as caring and thoughtful as they were in the 1970s. We don't know exactly why empathy fell or why it returned. History is not an experiment. One idea is that times of great suffering often bring people together and raise kindness. And we've had plenty of suffering in this short decade. One more point. The fall of empathy in 2011 went viral, but the recovery has gone under the radar. People have a keen eye for the worst things that others do, and that's what the news shows us. That's why it's the news. But everyday people are often kinder and more open-minded than we realize. Sometimes we just need to look a little closer. Go Celtics.
First, I would like to say that was a very reassuring tone of that story. And I would like for some of you kinder people, could you start following me on social media platforms, please? it would be really cool if some of you nice people would thin out some of my primary engagement with a lot of humankind right now is not in line with what our man just said. And number two, I don't know like how closely people pay attention often when people say their names before they, you know, do a story. And I heard my man say that his name was Jamil, and some of you may have seen what happened to my face, and I'm not going to take the joy away from anybody. Go ahead and Google up Jamil Zaki. I didn't see it coming, Sean. I did not see it coming. You tell me Jamil's a fan of the show, so he understands what's going on here.
Yeah, I think he's aware, and I think, you know, the Celtics line he threw at the end, it makes it all make sense. Yes.
Nah, I told you the other day I met a white Cornelius, huh?
You did not tell me that. That's wild.
I met a white dude named Cornelius, and I told him that he did not resemble any of the other Cornelii that I had met. I came across a Marcus something somewhere. I was doing something and I came across some white Marcus, unlike the Marci that I had come across before. But no, the Cornelius was a stutter. I think I asked him if his brother's name was Marcus.
Yeah, I need to know what his family does, like what his parents do that they thought Cornelius.
just hey, look, man, because we still cranking out the occasion. Like, there are still Cornelii coming off the line, right? We still get some of those. But shout out to you, Jamil. Appreciate you. Who we got next?
There's a story you actually suggested, and it is wild.
I'm Justin Fenton, and I'm a reporter with the Baltimore Banner, a new nonprofit news site. This week, my colleague Kristen Griffith and I reported on a major development in a case that rocked a suburban community here earlier this year. It started in January when a recording went viral that purportedly depicted the principal at Pikesville High School making racist and other insensitive remarks, such as saying, quote, ungrateful black kids can't test their way out of a paper bag, and questioning how hard it is to get those students to meet grade level expectations. The school was flooded with angry phone calls, demands that the principal resign, along with other vitriol on social media. Officials denounced the comments. But others stuck up for the principal, and through a union rep, he denied making such comments and suggested it could have been created through artificial intelligence. Though many seemed skeptical, Kristen and reporter Liz Bowie later talked to experts who said, yes, it did seem AI-generated. On Thursday, police leveled criminal charges against the school's athletic director at the time, Dazan Darian. They said they uncovered information showing Darian had been accessing AI tools and that the clip originated from an email account that they connected to him. The reason? Retaliation. Darian was being investigated at the time for making an improper payment to an athletics coach who was also his roommate. He was arrested while trying to board an airplane to Texas with a gun. Authorities said the case may be the first of its kind, and since no statutes existed to charge him for making the recording, he was charged with disrupting school activities and counts related to the improper payments. It's likely that legislators across the country will be taking up this issue in months and years to come as AI becomes more prevalent.
All right, first of all, Justin Finn's a really good reporter. I didn't realize that he had done this story. Shout out to him. Number two, Sean, can you imagine being that principal and trying to explain to people that no, it's not me. It's crazy to me too, right? It sounds just like me, but I swear it's not me. And the things they had him saying, they had him out here sounding like an Uncle Tom. So that make it even worse, right? Like he couldn't come back to work. Like, is your woman even gonna believe you? Like who? Whoa.
Like hearing that clip and then going outwardly to deny it makes me feel like you're guilty. You know, like it's almost like that's more of a red flag, but he was in the right. Like that was just all AI.
Because you know, some of his friends believed him. Many did not. Right? I have no idea what views he actually harbors. If he has ever like said anything that might lead somebody to believe that maybe this is such a thing that he would say. But man, and I've been in a similar place than this boy. When people decide they want to destroy you, the lengths that they will. Like, it's one thing when somebody's got beef with you. It's another when they are like, I am going to destroy you and your entire reputation. Like, can this man ever come back to work? Like, at least get like there? Can he ever come back?
Especially in like a schooling situation, I feel like momentum like that builds so quickly that it's almost impossible to slow it down. So to your point, like even if he's like not guilty of doing this, it's hard to look at him the same way because all these parents are just gonna be like, isn't that the guy? Or at least AI said this thing in his place.
Yeah. And like, I ain't gonna lie to you, man. I hope that man gets his life back on track. But if I were him and I did not get my life back on track, I would have a new life. And my new life would be haunting that man who did this to me. I would turn into Stevie Nicks. I would be staring into your soul every, if I ain't got no job, you ain't never gonna have no job. If he go to jail, I'll be like Fred Goldman. I'm gonna be at every parole hearing, whatever it is for me. I'm gonna make sure that your life is a living.
All right, a classic voicemail prompt, the moment where you decide to quit football. We got three good ones here.
Hey, Bomani, Cordae Snell from the Bay. The time I decided to quit football was when my teammate decided to jump on the pile, right? So I'm a D lineman. I'm having a good game, 5 tackles, 1 sack, right? Okay, I'm off to a good game. Don't get hurt. My teammate decides that he want to be a practice All-American, and he runs and jumps on the pile. Now, does he jump on the pile? No. He misses the pile, lands on my knee, and tears my MCL. I'm out for 8 to 10 weeks. Now, this was the third injury I had sustained. In the most recent years, I had got torn my MCL. I had a season once, and I had a bad concussion. But I think the last one was God trying to tell me, hey, fella, you don't need to be doing this. And I was just like, you know, if a teammate is injuring me and I'm not doing nothing, might be a time to let it go. Because a few months before that, I had started doing comedy. And I ain't never got ran up on because of my side. Thanks, Bomani. Love the show.
My favorite part, Shaw. I was had a good game. 5 tackles, 1 sack. You remember that to this day. To this day. I wonder if the game was ever 2 tackles and a sack. And then gradually, like as the story has grown, he gonna tell the story in about 10 years. But like, bro, you got to understand, man. 10 tackles, a sack, and a forced fumble. And it hit me in the hands, but I dropped it. I had a pick. It was looking, I saw the goal line before I saw the ball in. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, those stats are definitely going to just bounce up. And the injury's going to get even worse. You know, I had to get helicoptered off the field.
My bone was sticking out the back of my knee. Even to this day, I feel it a little bit. I ripped my jeans, putting them on.
All right, here's the next one.
Hey, Bo. Hey, Sean. My name's Charles. I'm in Minneapolis. Time I quit football, I remember it distinctly. High school, my senior year, I played defensive end. I was getting around the left tackle, flushed the quarterback out the pocket, so I'm chasing him. At that moment, I'm knocked out cold. I don't know what happened. What I found out later was that their 5'3", 250-pound fullback had put the crown of his helmet underneath my chin. And since I'm looking at the quarterback and I'm 6'2", I never even saw him like in front of me. So I'm knocked out cold, and I promise you this is how I remember it now. At that moment, I remember looking down at somebody who's laying on his back and he's moving his legs side to side. And I thought to myself, dang, that dude needs some help. And right as I said that, I started to like float into this person. And then I was looking down and realizing that it was my legs. So even now, like, that's still how I see that moment. So I ended up, you know, they did the little 2-finger test. I got back in the game later, but that was the day I decided that I was going to go ahead and play or join a track and field team in college. So that's my story.
Sean, odd job ran that man up out the paint.
He said 5'3", and I gasped.
His story worked the opposite way. That man keep getting shorter with every retelling. That dude, because I mean, how tall are you, right? So like that dude was 5'9" when the story first got told. By the time it's all gonna be said and done, it's like next thing I know, Cardi B just went down and came up and bow, took me out.
This guy who was 4'11", 360 pounds, took me out. All right, here's our last one.
Hey, Bo Mine, this is David from Southwest Missouri. I'm going to tell you about when football was done with me. My story is a little bit different. I hope it's worth your time. I found myself a 33-year-old married father playing non-pro football, which made it my 21st season as a football player. We were in our first round of our playoffs where a team had traveled a couple of hours to play us. I was playing Sam linebacker early in the game. We had him third and short and called our goal line defense, which puts almost everyone on the line of scrimmage shooting the gap. Unfortunately, they came out in 4 wide shotgun, so we had to make adjustments on the fly. I ended up in a mic spot, trying to get everyone else lined up, noticed the A-gap was wide open, and told the defensive tackle to get in the B, move from the B-gap to the A-gap. Had to turn my attention elsewhere to make sure everyone else was lined up, and then the ball was snapped. At that point, I looked up and saw the quarterback coming straight to that empty A-gap that had not been filled, bearing down on me. I had about 2 steps to put myself in the front of the quarterback before impact. Now, at this point, I need to tell you about that level of football, because you're dealing with adults with real jobs and real lives. Sometimes not everyone makes it to the game, and that team had not brought their regular quarterback that day. The man playing quarterback was wearing number 52 and was apparently a backup O-lineman who had about 40 pounds on my 5'11", 220-pound frame. I don't remember the impact, but I remember getting up off the ground and walking back towards the huddle, actively trying to regain control of my eyeballs and failing miserably. Didn't miss a play until they pulled the starters in the fourth quarter because we were up by enough. This moment confirmed to me that my football career would be coming to an end very soon. I finished the season undefeated, won the league championship, and I was done with that. A couple of notes at the end. My parents were there to see me playing for the first time in several years, and they also had a professional video team on the field who used the clip of me getting absolutely rocked in promotional videos for years afterwards. Thanks, Lamonte. Love the show.
Number 52. That man is a storytelling expert. Like, he should teach. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, hold on. My fault. I forgot. Sean, prize picks for the people.
Yes, I do have some prize picks. Playoffs are back, obviously. Thank you to prize picks. We got LeBron James in a potential final game for the Lakers, 26.5 points. I'll take more. I don't see a world where LeBron goes out sad in his potential last game for the purple and gold. In that same game, Austin Reeves, 3.5 rebounds. I'll take more. He's averaged about 4.5 this season and is doing pretty well on the rebounding case for the playoffs. Anthony Davis, 11.5 rebounds. If there's one thing Anthony Davis is going to do in a potential closeout game, it's going to get boards. I don't know about the scoring. I don't know about anything else. But Jaylen Brown is the final one, 31.5 points, rebounds, and assists. He's averaging about 25 in the playoffs. So this seems like a great bet. And hopefully you guys can all win a decent chunk of change.
Sean, something happened that made you feel the need to justify your overs.
It was Prize Picks wanting this segment to be a little longer. And so here I am giving my details, all good.
I was afraid that you felt like you needed to explain yourself to these people. And I didn't, you know, I wanted you to understand that I didn't think you needed to do that. And then halfway through me asking, I was like, you know what? I bet Prize Picks said that.
You know, and shout out to Prize Picks, but the audience obviously knows why I pick more anyway. So there's no one I really need to explain this to, but it's fun to add a little more fluff to the segment.
Optimism. It's appreciated, man. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. That is Sean Yu. He handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Judith Donath of The Atlantic. Check out her story on The End of the Web as We Know It. Thanks to Jamil Zaki of Vox. Check out his story on compassion making a comeback in America at Vox.com. And thanks to Justin Fenton of the Baltimore Banner. Check out his wild story about an athletic director accused of framing his boss with AI, and then he got arrested at the airport with a gun. Remember, follow The Right Time. Subscribe, like, rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.